Good luck.
Okay, so this maimer is on the Parsha, on Parsha's Toldos, and there are very few maimerim from the Rebbe on Parsha's Toldos, because on Parsha's Toldos, for whatever reason, there was rarely a Farbrengen, and when there was, it was oftentimes the day before Rosh Chodesh, so the maimer would be connected to the day before Rosh Chodesh, Machar Chodesh, or connected to the Hasidic festivals, so maybe you had this Padu B'Shalom maimer, but anyway, this is not the maimer I found. And it was recited by the Rebbe on Mevarchem HaChedesh Kislev, which was last Shabbos. But it was Shabbos Parshas Toldos, which is this Shabbos. The year was 1957. Ve'ela Toldos Yitzchak ben Avram. The Parsha begins with the following verse. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram, holy this Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Now, it's very obvious that there seems to be redundancy here. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram gives birth to Yitzchak. He doesn't even give birth. Okay, fine. That's not the issue. He fathered Yitzchak. Yeah. We're going into euphemism now. But the point is, in the same verse, to say Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram fathered Yitzchak. So we have this diyukim, ma'o kefal aloshin. Why is there redundancy? It says Yitzchak ben Avram. What's added by saying Avram heilu this Yitzchak? Ve'itzarch lavin. Something else that has to be understood over here. And that's not specific, but more global. There is a Gemara. It's found in Masechet Brachot, somewhere near the beginning. And it says over there, Ein korin avot ela lishlosha. We don't call father only to three. So the term father is only used for three Jews in history. We don't say Moshe Avinu, David Avinu. We don't even say Reuven, Shimon, or Levi Avinu. We only say Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So from the fact that we only call three Jews in history father, that means that there must be some kind of father-like connection for each and every one of us. Something about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that transmits itself to every single Jew. And indeed, the Rebbe doesn't elaborate here in this Maimer, at least not the way they wrote the Maimer. But in Likut, in Torah Or, the Alter Rebbe says, the mystical meaning of Ein Kedem La'Avos Ela L'Shlesha is just like every one of us has the DNA of our father and our mother. So when they say there's only three fathers, that means there's only three Jewish lodestars. Only three great Jews of history, that necessarily we can say there's a piece of them in every one of us.
And Imos.
I'm sorry?
And Imos.
Imos is the mothers. We're not talking about the mothers now. There's the mothers and the fathers. So we have genetics from our father and genetics from our mother. Then the Jew is the genome of a Jew, or the Jew-nome, if you want to call it, you have to necessarily have a piece of the fathers and the mothers. So that begs the question then. It's a little bit easier to understand what it means to have a piece of Avram. Avram was a person who was hospitable and kind and generous. And the truth is that there is no people that is more kind or generous per capita than the Jewish people. Yes, there are generous people everywhere. But per capita, the amount of tzedakah that's given by Jewish people is unmatched in any ethnic or religious group. This is a fact. In fact, I have a friend in New York who is involved with the IRS, and he said that when they see large amounts of charity, if they say, "Oh, it's a Jewish fellow," if it's a Jew, then they don't look after it. They don't. It's a red flag usually. All of a sudden, there's a large amount of tax. It's a red flag. That flag is vastly diminished if it's somebody from the Jewish community, because this is the way we are. It's the way it is.
Not CRA, you mean? Every year they want to see all my receipts.
I don't say CRA. I don't know.
Really? Yeah. They want to see them all.
I only have friends in the IRS.
Send them all in and they shut up. Every year.
Well, it's because our donations are more than we make.
I can, that's right.
Sorry?
I can confirm that for you. I can always tell who, from the tax returns that I do, I can always see
who the
Jews are.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. So there you have an accountant confirming, a Canadian accountant confirming this. Hey, but not, that doesn't mean to say that there are not extraordinarily generous people found in other ethnic groups. But as a rule, we all have this. There's a certain Avram Avinu about us. It's endemic. Question, of course, though, is what is Yitzchak? Are we all well diggers?
Gevura.
Gevura. What does it mean? So we have to understand this. What does it mean that there's the Aveda in the Nefesh Kolechad Mi'Yisrael, that we have this idea of Yitzchak ben Avram, and Avram held his Yitzchak? They're just saying even more. It's not just a question of having an Avram in you and a Yitzchak in you. What is the meaning in Avedas Hashem of Yitzchak, the son of Avram, and Avram fathered Yitzchak? What does that verse mean in Avedas Hashem? V'hinei. Yadua asher Avram v'Yitzchak u'b'chinas chesed u'gvura. This is a well-worn subject in Hasidic and mystical parlance, that Avram represents right energy, or chesed, kindness or giving. Yitzchak, conversely, represents the idea of discipline, restraint. Avram is midas chesed. Avram represents the midah, the measure of chesed, of kindness. Yitzchak represents midas ha-gvura. Now, don't make the mistake of thinking that chesed is good and gvura is bad. That's not true. Chesed means to give. Giving money to the Castro government was a very bad idea. It's a very bad idea. In fact, the United States gave something like $1 billion, a crazy amount of money to the Castro government. And guess what? 97 cents of every dollar they give went straight to the Castro government. 3 cents went to the Cuban worker. That's so giving. Yeah. Not. That's terrible. That means the world's largest democracy actually was supporting a communist regime that brutally oppressed its people. That's terrible. So giving is not always nice. Restraint is not always a bad thing. The person is diabetic. They shouldn't be having sugar. I can't control myself. That's not good. Or the person who doesn't know how to stand up to somebody who's saying the wrong things or doing the wrong things. That takes restraint. That takes inner strength and courage. So I can't do it. Can't do it. You're sent off to the front. Your job was to defend your homeland. And you say, I can't do it. But there's a terrorist over there. He's going to kill, who knows, innocent people. I don't know. I can't pull the trigger. That's not good. That's a deficiency. Chesed and Gevurah is not good and bad. There can be a bad element of Chesed. There could be a bad element of Gevurah. Both are necessary. Both can be not only good, but extremely profound and powerful. So Avram represents chesed, and Yitzchak represents gvura, and obviously Avram and Yitzchak are perfect tzaddikim. So Avram represents perfection in chesed, and Yitzchak represents perfection in gvura. So we have this idea that's found in the Pardes. It's very early.
They're only chesed, they're only gvura?
In Kedusha, nothing is only. So because nothing is only, there's always an amalgamation or a coalescence of different elements. Within Yitzchak, there's also chesed. Within Avram, there's also gvura. No question about that. In fact, according to the Kabbalists, that's the great thing about the Akedah, that Avram, who was chesed, had the ultimate display of gvura. So they're not only chesed or only gvura, but overridingly. So it says in the Pardes, brought down in the name of the Sefer HaBohir, it's only the second earliest documented book of Kabbalah. Amra midas ha-chesed, that midas ha-chesed said before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kol yemei ha-yes Avram ba-aretz, as long as Abraham was alive on planet Earth, le-yitzrachti lasis malachti, I had nothing to do. Chesed said, I was golfing, I retired. Nobody needed me. Well, why not? Doesn't chesed have a function? Doesn't chesed bring a chesed energy into the world? Yeah. But Avram's chesed is so profound that he's doing it instead of me. Davidos shel Avram, the toil, the effort, the service of Avram was in doing what? Chnosas Archim, hospitality, Gimel's Chasadim, dispensing freely of kindness. He was giving people food and drink, which that's the idea of Gimel's Chasadim Megashmias. But not only was he materially begashmias giving chesed and providing for people, but kiim gam beruchnias, also spiritually. The acharei sha'ochlu v'shasu, after they ate and drank, he wasn't satisfied just to have helped somebody materially. He said, hoidu berchu v'shabchu v'shibchu l'misha amavaya oilam. Now it's time for you to acknowledge, to praise, to bless the God, the creator of heaven and earth. Do you know who you're blessing? Do you know who is responsible for life and its many gifts? And essentially, this is all about Avraham Avinu's modus operandi of being megala elakus ba'olam, of revealing divinity within the syntax and framework of everyday life in this world. As we read last week's parsha, or was it 2 weeks ago? Vayikra, 2 weeks ago. Shom b'shem Havaya keil olam. He called out there in the name of Havaya, the name of God, God of the universe. And we talked about this actually in the Maamar we studied 2 weeks ago. The Avedasai, that Avram's Aveda, was Lahamshech Ulegales Alekuspa Olam. He said, the world is a dark place. The world is a godless place. The world is a place that's atheistic. I will change that. I'm going to make God part of the currency of everyday conversation. And he did. He rotated the entire attitude and perspective of the society of the day. Omnom, however, on the other side, Avedas Yitzchak was Bekava Gvura. Yitzchak's primary emphasis and thrust was not on chesed, not on engaging, not on giving, but rather the idea of Gvura, of inner restraint and discipline. Like it says, Upachad Yitzchak Hayali, that Yaakov Avinu says, the God of my father, but he doesn't call him God. He calls him the fright. It was awesome, overwhelming. Pachad Yitzchak. So this is Lefisha Hoysa Avaidasa Bebechinas HaGvura. His Aveda was a reflection of the concept of Gvura, driven by restraint. Hine Bezin Yonim Elu, these two ideas of Avraham and Yitzchak, who conversely represent the concept of Chesed and Gvura. So there's a Zoharic statement. It goes like this. Or, light, da Avram, that's Avram. The Choshech, and darkness, da Yitzchak, that's Yitzchak. In other words, Avram was Chesed. Chesed is, the idea of Chesed is Hamshacha, Gilui, to bring forth, to draw forth. Like light that spills, that spreads. That's Bechinas Or. The Yitzchak show Gvura, Yitzchak represents restraint, courage, inner tenacity and strength. Gvura is in Yonehele, restrain. The person who's attacked in public and doesn't lose his cool is able to be tight-lipped. And when he responds in very measured tones. Doesn't fly off his handle. Think about the amount of strength that takes. Think about how many people who can lift many, many, many pounds over their head but would never be able to control themselves. Think about being in a situation of total meltdown and yet to maintain absolute, perfect self-control, to be in total, so to speak, focus, not to lose yourself.
But if that's your nature, then there's less restraint than if it isn't your nature.
Let's think about what you just said. You said if that's your nature, there's less restraint. Your nature would be one of restraint. You're thinking of restraint from a perspective of a virtue. What's more virtuous? If it come to somebody with greater difficulty, so then it's less virtuous. If it came with greater hardship, with greater challenge, it's more virtuous. We're not even talking about virtue here. We're talking about nature. Some people, that's what they're really good at. They have what they call sang-froid. They're always cool. They're always collected. The whole world is collapsing around them. They got it together. That's a nature of Gvura. That's a person, everybody else is whittling the time and not focused. And this person is just sitting and getting the job done. Doesn't care what's going on around them. Sits in that cubicle and just knocks things off. That's Gvura. So this is the idea of Yitzchak. And Gvura is primarily helem, concealment, restraint, not to show you cards. The poker face. That's really hard. That's darkness. That's darkness. So we have this Zoharic statement that or light is Avram and Choshech is Yitzchak. We talk about creation. So creation begins with two different dimensions of energy. And this is really cool because modern science corroborates this perfectly. There's or and there's Choshech. Translated into very ordinary terms, It's called black and red, positive or negative, dark matter and light matter. There's antimatter and matter. There's the idea of darkness and light. Where do we see this? Well, it's a verse from the prophecies of Isaiah, and it's part of our davening. We say it daily. Yotzer Or creates light. Uvorei Choshech. He forms light, and he creates darkness. The Bechinas Or, the level of Or is a Madrega, Sheyecholu Lehizgalas. That's a level of some kind of energy that can be revealed. And its revelation is called light. It can be revealed to a lower dimension, because that's what its nature is. It's all about revelation. L'zayis nikra or. That's why it's called or. Or means gilu. Thank you. Obechinas choyshech. The idea of darkness. That's the bechina, that's the level. She'efshir she'tizgala l'mata. It cannot be revealed unless you're on that level. So if you're on a lower level, you're not going to be able to tap into this. You're not going to be able to get this. That's the meaning of choshech. It's choshech vehelim. It's darkness. It's concealment. That's the meaning of yotzer or vore choshech. That's the idea that God forms light, creates darkness. The yotzer who bechinas sheyesh b'kvar ezet surah. To form, in order to form something, you have to have a pre-existing matter. You can form the unformed matter, but you have to have matter. So when it comes to light, it says he forms light. Yotzer. But when it comes to the concept of darkness, we're not talking about something which is pre-extant altogether. It's something that's not only unformed or is lacking in dimension, it's lacking in style. So you're going to form and add that form. Here there is nothing. It's something that cannot be revealed. It's not something that can be revealed in a particular way. And so with when you form it or develop it or add the style and substance, you're transforming the matter in a way which is more effective in a new reality. When you talk about choshech, we're talking about something which can't be revealed. There is no matter in modern parlance or modern scientific parlance, antimatter. By the way, nobody's ever seen antimatter. That's the point. You can't see it. It's a theory. Although, a few weeks ago, there was a discovery of something which was very compelling about antimatter. They think they found the first black hole. So the problem is, if you would be in a black hole, you wouldn't be, because it's antimatter. But that's the yin and yang, if you will, of the universe. And both are necessary. And in order for there to be revelation and existence, there has to be the dark pull of antimatter. So that's Or and Choshech, which is Avram and Yitzchak, which is really endemic to creation from the very beginning. So Rebbe asks a question now. Omnam tzarech lahavin. We really need to understand this. How could you call that darkness? When we talk of being in the dark, I know what I want to do. You don't know what I want to do. So you're in the dark. That's your problem, not mine. It's not intrinsically darkness. If you don't know what I'm thinking, I'm not darkness. You're in the dark. In other words, Choshech is a description of somebody else who's outside of my reality that can't understand what I'm thinking or knowing. But that doesn't make me darkness. That's only the way somebody else relates to me. I would say, it's lit up for me. I got clarity. I know what I'm doing. And the person, this guy's like, I'm in the dark. I don't know what the heck they're doing. Okay, you're in the dark. So Choshech is a description of the Zulas. Choshech becomes a descriptive terminology for somebody else, not for the person themselves, not for the subject itself. Hazulas eini yochel lekabel. Ve'eich mitzad tamzeh, koivim shem etzma madrega shibichines Choshech. So how do I get labeled by virtue of your take on the matter? How does that label me? It's dark. Why is it dark? Because you don't get it. So you're dark. I don't mean me dark. How does Yitzchak become the definitive darkness? Yitzchak is Choshech. Why? Because the others couldn't get it. He was too lofty, too high, too profound, too deep. It couldn't be shared. That doesn't make him dark. It makes you in the dark.
But if somebody holds back, they're creating darkness. No?
Creating darkness? Why? They're just not sharing light. So one is light that's shared, and one is light that's retained. It's not darkness. Hare be'etzem inyonam, hare adaraba. On the contrary, ha'helam ulamayla migili. Concealment is higher than revelation. The things I can reveal are the things that are not in something which is totally beyond you. It's not totally beyond you, I can reveal those things. The things that are beyond you, I can't reveal. If I did, you wouldn't understand it anyway. So what I'm teaching you that which I'm able to share. But there's something that I understand that I'm not able to share. Why? Because I'm 20 years ahead of you, that's why. because there's an accumulative effect of Torah study. And you study and you study and you study and you grasp certain things. And I look back 10 years ago and I feel how stupid I was 10 years ago. And hopefully in 10 years from now, I'll think how stupid I was now. Why? Because the more you learn, the more you develop, the more you know. So there's endless levels, if you will, in the development or appreciation or understanding of Torah. But that which I can't reveal is not because it's a lower thought process. It's the opposite. So why do you call it darkness? That's super light. It's just light that's blinding.
But the stuff you could accept, but the person doesn't want to reveal.
We're not talking here about wanting to. We're talking about something which is intrinsically unable to be revealed. Marty, be nice.
You're not
All right, no. He, everybody understands what I'm saying, yes?
Yeah, yeah.
Something's wrong with this description. Something doesn't seem to square. When we talk about Helam and Gilui, we talk about revelation and concealment. That which is shared and that which is held back. That we don't mean that which was once concealed is now revealed. Ukamai, for example, Davar hamunach b'teva, something which is in a container. V'nizgala, and then the container was opened. It was a gift. It was wrapped. Nobody knew what this was, the mystery gift. And then you took off the wrapping. You opened the box. Said, oh, now we know what it is. The mystery has been revealed. So what happens then is, hadavar atzmei boli gilui. Then it's the thing itself that comes to revealed state. Im hoya hakavana b'eifin zeh, if that's what we meant, then all these questions would stand. Azai be'emes hayagilui l'mayla me'inyan ahelam. Then, in fact, the idea of revelation would be better than concealment. Concealment means something's in the way. Get rid of the something in the way, and lo and behold, it's revealed. Hari'az hayabigili beiz hamaylas. When we talk about revelation, revelation would have all virtues. It would have the virtue of concealment and the virtue of revelation. But that's not what we're talking about. It's not the truth. That which is subconscious always remains subconscious. It's subconscious by definition. We don't have language. We don't have the ability to develop or reveal certain things. There's something of the subconsciousness that seeds the consciousness. But that which is intrinsically always hidden always remains hidden. When we're talking about Helam, we're not talking about, I don't want to tell you what I'm thinking. And you say, come on, please. All right, I'll tell you. So there was this idea. You could have known it before. For whatever reason, I chose to hide it from you. And then at a certain point, they said, no, I'm going to share it with you. So it wasn't a Helam, and then it became a Gili. But that's not what we talk about. We say something's intrinsically in Helam. It's more like there's the subconsciousness, and then there's consciousness. And the person himself doesn't even understand his own subconsciousness. And Sigmund Freud said, I can plumb your consciousness. I can plumb your inner latent consciousness. I can't get to subconsciousness. I don't know how to do that. We don't have language for that. Now, the subconsciousness is very profound and powerful. It has enormous impact, but we don't understand how. We don't really know why. Because the Helam remains in a state of Helam. Now, this idea was articulated by the Rebbe in a number of Maimarim prior to this one. This is a Hemshech. This is a continuation of Maimarim. So we're talking about some very deep and heady stuff over here. And Rebbe himself says, as I explained earlier, and so on and so forth. But here he's talking about a detail of this bigger thesis. The thing is like this. Ma The Mizesha Kreda Maisa B'Shem Cheshach, when we call something darkness, that's its definition, it is darkness. If we are defining it as darkness, it cannot be it's dark compared to somebody else. Somebody else is in the dark. If you're in the dark, that doesn't make me darkness. That makes you in the dark. If I am defined as darkness, we're getting darkness. We're talking about something which is intrinsically so. Remember, a true definition is not dialectical. If you define something by means of its dialect or its surrounding, its syntax, you didn't really define it. You're defining it through the prism of how it relates to others. Define it. What is it? Not what use of it is it to me. What is it? So a person says, well, who am I? I'm a waiter, I'm a cook, I'm a chef, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer. That's not who you are. That's who what you do. And the person comes and says, oh, the guy with the food came. That doesn't make me the guy with the food. It could be I, as far as you're concerned, I'm the guy with the food. I brought the food. But it doesn't make me a food. If I'm the food, I'm in trouble. That's something else. Right? You walk into a convention of cannibals and they say, lunch has arrived, you're in trouble. Now, by the way, that's also being defined dialectically. You're really not food. You're really not lunch. It's just, unfortunately for you, the people around you, that's how they choose to see you. That would not be a good situation. In other words, when we say something is choshech, we cannot be referring to how people know or see, how people relate. If you are choshech, that means you. The definition is so. V'hainu, the bechinas ha'helem, we're talking about Helam and Giloy. We're talking about something which is very close to the source. And because it's very close to the source, it's not it doesn't get revealed. It's not the kind of thing that gets revealed, like the notion of subconsciousness. Subconsciousness is the dark energy behind our active conscious thought. And because it's very close, it's Bekirov Lumakir, that's why it remains in what's called Heder HaYispashtos. That's why it cannot express, it cannot be diffused. It's pre-diffusion by its nature. And because it can't be diffused, that's why it's not coming into a state of revelation for others. The Rebbe gives us an example. We have a halacha. If you want your meat to be kosher, what do you need to do? You want meat to be kosher, what do you need to do? No. If you want an animal to be kosher, you have to shecht it. The animal is shechted already. Now I want...
to drain the meat?
I got to drain the blood. I got salt, right. So what happens? I take the salt. We call it kosher salt. All salt's kosher. Why is it called kosher salt?
Because
it's koshering salt. That's the right way to... But nobody knows what that is. They just call it kosher salt. So koshering salt is this heavy, what's called in Yiddish, grubbe salz. Coarse salt. You throw the coarse salt on the meat. Now, you know what the nature of salt is? It sucks out. Dries out, draws out. So the nature of salt is you put the salt on the meat, what is that doing to the blood?
Draws it out.
Comes the question. So just like the blood is going out of the meat, why can't the blood sink back into the meat? It can. If you leave it too long, that's right. And that's why the halacha is that you salt, you cover the meat in heavy salt for 18 minutes. And what do you do after those 18 minutes?
Rinse it out.
You have to bang it off. And when you finish banging all the salt off, what do you have to do? Rinse it, and then you have kosher meat. Yes? Nipots and hadacha. There's halachas about this. So what happens is that at a certain point, the salt loses its potency because it becomes spent. The potency is spent. Now, once the potency is spent, if you leave the salty blood, pardon me, the bloody salt, what happens to the meat? It reabsorbs all the blood. But when the salt is an active agent, the blood goes only one way. Why? So the halacha is, Aydi detarid lemivla leipalit. Because it's so busy expelling, right? So we have this idea that it cannot ingest. It cannot absorb because it's busy expelling. We have another idea. And the other idea is that's from the perspective of the meat or the blood, from the perspective of the salt. The salt doesn't expel. The salt draws. It's busy drawing out. Because the salt is busy drawing out, the salt doesn't re-inject. In other words, the liyesa shetarid lemivla, because it's so busy giving out, so the salt is so busy absorbing, so we have what would be called in a metaphor, this of course is a huge leap, big metaphor, but we would have what's called bitl kol chushov in ishayach lashpia klal. What would this mean now, taking it from the graphic example of salt and blood into a person? Let's say a person is in a state of absorption. He's in a state of absorption. He's learning a lesson. When he's learning the lesson, when he's grasping the idea, he's not able to share the idea. Why? Because he's grasping it. So imagine for yourself a person whose job is simultaneous translation, but he doesn't really understand what's being said. And because it's too profound, and he's not familiar with the terminology. He knows the language. So he's going to try to translate. What will happen? He'll sound like that guy who was translating Braille by Nelson Mandela's funeral. The guy was like off the walls. Like, he didn't understand a word that's being said, or he was smoking something. I don't know what happened there. But the problem is that when you're so busy trying to absorb, you cannot give. Why? Because you're in a state of absorption. So we call that, so that's when I'm in a non-revealing state. I'm in a non-revealing state doesn't mean that I actually can't yet reveal, right? You know, I'll reveal. When I want to reveal, I'll reveal. No, I'm in the state of a non-revealing state. I'm in the state of absorption state. In other words, when we talk about choshech, we talk about the non-revealing. It's not because I'm choosing not to reveal, then I later reveal like something that's in the wrapped up in the box, and I take off the wrapper, and I take off the, and now I see what it is. We're talking about a different state of being. So the state of being of absorption, which is what we call in Chassidus bitl achushim, that a person is in a state of nullity. He's not actively engaged, not actively expressing it. He's in a non-expressive state. When he's in a non-expressive state, so it's because he's in an absorptive state. So in a state of absorption, he's not able to provide. Now, he may move from that absorptive state into a state where now he's able to he's processed. And now that he's finished being processing, now he's moved from dimension A, headspace 1, into a new headspace. That's true, but that's a separate reality. Now, where was the person in a higher state of mental acuity? Where did he harness his deepest genius, his deepest thoughts? When he was absorbing or when he's sharing? I would say when he's absorbing. That's in the exalted state of, I'm not thinking of style or presentation. I'm focused entirely on the idea. The person is marshaling the deepest realms of his intellectual capacity. So when we say Choshech, we're not speaking about, well, it's Choshech because the gift is wrapped up. Pull off the wrapper, now it's revealed. We're talking about a different state of being. So when Yitzchak's called Choshech, it doesn't mean Yitzchak doesn't reveal, so he's called Choshech. It means Yitzchak is so close to the source that he's in a state of darkness. He's in a state of full absorption. Like this antimatter kind of reality. Doesn't allow for anything else. Because he's in this very, very lofty state right now. So when a person comes to you and says, can you please explain such and such to me? Say, no, I'm trying to figure it out myself right now. Like, leave me alone. Don't disturb me. When I finish getting this figured out, then I can move into the next frame of existence, which is, now I can explain it to you. Like a teacher and a pupil, mashpia mekabel, the one who's the recipient, the one who's the benefactor. When the Talmud is trying to hang on to every word of his teacher, trying to figure out what's being communicated, as I would bitl v'ahed mitzias, he's not thinking of himself. He's not thinking of his own novelty, his own new ideas. How can I tweak that idea, develop it further? No, he's not shayach l'ashpia. He's not shayach to teach. He's not shayach. It's not possible for him to develop the idea. But rather, he's in a state of total absorption. So this is and understanding the meaning of dark energy from a mystical perspective. When we talk about Avram and Yitzchak, we're talking about two different levels of closeness to divinity. Avram cleaves unto God, but in a manner that he's able to communicate godliness. Yitzchak is in such a deep state of communion and oneness with Hashem that he's not even able to communicate that. He's not in a communicative headspace. He's in an absorptive headspace. He's in a deeper state of bittul. And now we understand. We don't have time. This is a long maimer, unfortunately. But I mean, fortunately, but for our purposes, we're able to fully develop this idea. But now we understand that within our Yiddishkeit, there really are two elements. There's who we are as givers, who we are as sources of influence, source of inspiration for others. It's a very important part of what we do. But there's another element of our Avodas Hashem, and that's our personal, our own personal connection to Hashem. That we always can't be engaged in giving. There's times when we also have to be receiving. There's a downloading time. So when a Yid is immersed in his tefillah, in his davening, and he's trying to lose himself, it's not a good time for him to be able to get up and share ideas or influence. But both are necessary. You need to have an Avram inside you. You also need to have a Yitzchak inside you. You got to have the light. You got to have the darkness. Yotzer Or, Avar Choshech. You need the Chesed. You need the Gvura. And only when you have both do you have what we call a well-rounded picture of Yiddishkeit. And that's all we have time for today. L'chaim.